Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and if you want to advertise with us or questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken, with me as always, Cody Westerland. Cody, the rebuilding Bulls era has begun in Chicago.
Home opener, Bulls fall 87-77 to the Spurs in a game that really wasn't even that competitive.
No.
10 points, I mean, it was close a little bit early because both teams were shooting poorly and such, but this is a game that the Spurs pretty much had under control for the whole second half. The Bulls offense had nothing going. That's a credit to the Spurs defense and the Bulls rebuild, obviously, in this sense. Lauri Markkanen, 13 points, 12 rebounds, his first ever double-double, and we will get to that some more as well, but Lauri is a guy who I think played 37 minutes or so in this one, and that is because Bobby Portis punched Nikola Mirotic, of course, on Tuesday that we've talked about at length, earning Bobby an 8-game suspension, Nico 4 to 6 weeks on the shelf as he recovers, so a lot of power forward minutes are available. And I think the biggest story of the day, obviously, was Bobby publicly apologizing before the game to basically reporters, media as a proxy to the public and fans, basically, is his point. And also to put a public apology on the record to Nikola Mirotic, because Bobby Portis has tried to apologize to Nikola Mirotic by calling him directly and texting him, and Nico has not responded to Bobby yet. Which was clearly very telling in this instance.
I thought, I mean, first of all, I mean, would you respond this
not
quickly
yet.
To somebody who did that to you? No,
no.
I wouldn't. But, I mean, I thought it was interesting that Bobby put it out there that Nico hadn't responded like that. Like,
yeah.
he could have just said, yeah, you know, I texted him. And then he probably would have left it at that. He said, I texted him and he didn't respond.
We would have followed up with, what did he say? You know what I mean? And he could have said, keep it between us.
He could have said, I'll keep it between us.
He doesn't need to be in the market of lying, and he's telling the truth in that instance, obviously. But Bobby Portis talked for about 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes or so. He had an opening statement in which he said, this is not who Bobby Portis is.
I like how it only took him like 15 seconds into his statement to go to the third person.
Yeah, I mean, that's Bobby, you know, like in the best of times and the worst of times. And like, look, I don't know Bobby Portis' whole life story, but this has to be his worst professional basketball moment.
Oh, 100%.
And it will follow him around his whole career. As John Paxson pointed out earlier in the week in media availability, like, this is nearly unprecedented to hurt a teammate that bad with landing a punch. Of course, punches have been thrown in the NBA before, but this was something that was devastating for the Bulls and Nico, which we talked about. But I guess my question for you is, what did you make of Bobby's apology? He clearly stuck to a predetermined script of saying, I'm a competitor, we were competing. Every question about it getting heated, every question about details of whether Nico pushed him, of what was happening before, if Nico said anything, everything came back to we're competing, we're competitors. And obviously that's the point. That's good PR, probably. It's an excellent PR move because you don't need every tiny, small detail out there of this basically one-man, one-sided boxing match in practice. But just what did you think? Did you think it was sincere?
I think Bobby feels really bad about what happened. I don't think he enjoys the fact that he put his teammate in the hospital and his teammate is going to... Yeah, I know they are playing the same position, and this is probably good for Bobby's playing time, but I don't think Bobby is happy about what happened. So in that sense, yeah, I do think it was sincere. You know, he said basically what you're supposed to say in this situation. He said, what I did was wrong. I accept full responsibility. This isn't who I... Like, he basically... Everything you're supposed to say in this kind of situation, he said. And, you're definitely right. He kind of fell back on the, oh, we're competitors, we were competing, this is how this happened thing several times. That's just kind of what he went back on. But, like, what I thought was interesting was he kind of made sure to not make it seem like any of this was Nico's fault. That's been pretty publicly put out there. You know, Pax and Hoiberg and Robin Lopez both said that there was fault on both sides. All the reporting around it has been that there was fault on both sides. But, you know, Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times, our friend, a friend of the program, asks Bobby, you know, is it because of the playing time stuff? Yeah. Is it because of, you know, you guys battling positionally? And Bobby, every single time he could have said, you know, yeah, Nico escalated this, Nico instigated this, he said, no, I shouldn't have done what I did.
Yeah, he certainly was asked directly about who had the instigator role. And, yeah, he didn't put it on Nico whatsoever. He said we were competing and it got heated, obviously. So that's basically just, I mean, maybe that's on both sides, but it's, you know, I thought he handled, in the toughest moment of his professional basketball life, or in his basketball life, you know what I mean? In doing what he loves to do so much, I thought, like, he handled the apology pretty well. I guess the one thing I would say about all of this is that I don't get the sense, like, after, because of what he said, Nico not responding, and, like, I know... He kept coming back on the I'm a competitor thing, which isn't to say he's not sincere, but it also didn't feel like 100% from the heart when it's almost like you're reading off a predetermined script, you know what I mean? So I don't know when it comes to salvaging that relationship. I don't know if it's salvageable. I don't. I mean, this might be, the Bulls might move through 1 year here and just, like, have that sit-down meeting, and they fully expect to have a sit-down meeting between Bobby and Nico, basically when Nico's able to return to the facility. And that doesn't mean return to practice. It's when he's willing and ready to even feel good enough to get up out and move out of his house, basically. Because he's not bedridden, but he's pretty much house-ridden right now, you know what I'm saying? So, like, when they have that sit-down, and, like, they can have it, they can try to put this behind them, and, like, carry it out for a year and realize this isn't good to have years down the road in this rebuild. And they got that team option on Nico's second year. You know, Bobby's a young guy, whatever. We're not getting too far ahead there. But, like, if this is going to be salvageable, there's so much work that had to be done. And this is the first of many, 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 many steps. But I guess I'm just saying I didn't get when it's kind of scripted, like when you're reading what PR kind of probably told you to read and saying we have to mend this, like, I just didn't get any sense yet that he has any idea how to do that, or that, like, he is 100% in on actually doing it, or if they're just in on making this tolerable for a season.
Well, what I would say to anybody who thinks that there's no possible way that they can get past this, and I realize this is a teammate inflicting physical pain on another teammate versus a teammate inflicting kind of, you know, broken trust slash emotional stuff. But Nick Young and D'Angelo Russell played together for a full season after that the Snapchat video.
After he blew him up with his girlfriend.
Right, after that whole thing. Like, it seemed, in the days and weeks following that whole incident, it seemed like Swaggy would probably never forgive D'Angelo, and, like, you know, that was going to be a thing.
Did he forgive him?
Probably not, but, like, I think deep down in his heart, no, he probably hasn't, but... It got to the point where they still, for a whole season after that, they were on the same team. And, they, you know, if they maybe aren't best friends, they were at least, like, it was workable enough that they could be in the same locker room together.
Yeah, I think that's a little apple to oranges, obviously.
It's a little bit of a different situation.
You don't have
the physical component of it.
You don't have an instance in which, if it had taken place on a street of Chicago, that someone would be charged with assault.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I thought it was interesting, by the way, that... Bobby was asked about whether he thought there was a chance that Nico could file take some kind of legal action, and he just said, I don't know. I would be shocked if that happened.
Yeah, I don't expect that to happen either, and Bobby said he hasn't really thought about that, and he doesn't expect it at this moment. Another note on that is that Fred has obviously been talking to Bobby, who's still around at practice, because he's allowed to practice with the team. We haven't got a 100% clear answer on why he's allowed to practice with the team, because Fred just dodged it completely and said that's what we decided. But I imagine it's because if it's a league mandated suspension, you were explaining to me earlier.
Yeah.
Usually they're not allowed to practice with the team. I think this 8-game suspension is what, nearly three weeks worth of suspension time. Like, that would have been a long time to have a 22-year-old away from the team. And like, I don't think they wanted to rip all of basketball away from Bobby Portis, you know what I mean? Like, so that's why he's probably allowed to practice. He's not allowed to be in the building during games. He was basically at the United Center on Saturday afternoon, late in the afternoon, solely to apologize publicly.
Right. He, you know, they brought him out. I think the rule is 2 hours before tip-off, you have to leave. So the game was a 7 o'clock tip tonight. So he would have had to be out of the building by 5. He talked to us around 4:30. So that's kind of, that's just kind of the timeline there. Just for those of you who don't like kind of know how this stuff works behind the scenes, that's just kind of some insight there.
The Fred point was that Fred's obviously talked to Bobby, mainly texting Nico, because like, I don't know how like well Nico can even speak right now, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like,
if I had a broken jaw, I wouldn't be trying to use my mouth.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 2 fractures in his face. So it's probably difficult for him to do much of anything right now that involves that sort of effort, whether it's moving around or even talking to people. And Fred said he's been in contact with Nico. He's not going to serve as a bridge, basically, to getting these two to talk to each other, to get him to sit down. He basically said it has to be on their own time and accord. Like, they both have to be ready. Fred's not sitting here telling Nico, you need to open up and talk to Bobby. You know what I mean? The first day that Nico's back, if Nico doesn't want to have a huge sit-down with Bobby yet and he just wants to come talk to Fred and a few teammates, like, they're not going to force him to have that sit-down yet. You know what I mean? Like, this is basically on Nico's terms is what everything is because of how devastating it is.
And I think that's the correct way for Fred to handle it. Yeah. You know, this is, I mean, Fred does get paid a lot of money, but this is kind of above Fred's pay grade. He's like, you know, I believe Bobby when he says that he reached out via text and he's apologized to everybody. But, you know, Bobby is the one who has to repair his public image. It's completely in his best interest to apologize. So he's, you know, he's done that. You know, Fred can't force Nico. Fred doesn't know what, you know, it would be kind of weird for Fred to come in and say, look, Nico, you have to forgive this guy who punched you in the face and took away 2 months of your season, potentially. You have to, you know, forgive him and, you know, be willing to talk to him. That's a completely Nico decision, and I think it's the right move for Fred to say, okay, you two are adults. You figure this out.
Yeah, and I think this is really important here. I don't think the Bulls have a clue how this gets fixed, how this gets mended. I don't think anyone in the organization has a clue of what the best approach is.
Like, because this is unprecedented. It's not like you can look back and say, oh, this is exactly how... The only time I can think of that something close to this happened was the Jailblazers in the mid-2000s when Zach Randolph punched Ruben Patterson and broke his retina.
Do you have any idea how that played out afterward?
Well, that team was on a completely different level. I mean, they were still teammates after that for a while, but that team was on such... I mean, the Bulls are pretty dysfunctional in their own way, but those Jailblazers teams were on such a different level of dysfunction.
Well, that was also, if I remember correctly, that wasn't like the beginning of a rebuild in which you're promoting culture with
those teams were trying to make the playoffs. So
you just blow that team up. You know, you solve that problem by blowing that team up, basically.
Right.
The Bulls don't have that. That's not a...
They kind of just did that.
Yeah. The Bulls don't have that option right now, more or less. So it's worth keeping an eye on. I don't know when Nico... He's struggling.
It's going to be a while.
Yeah, he's struggling physically, emotionally, mentally.
Again, like, the surgery to fix his face is a 4 to 6 week recovery timeline, but they can't even do that until he clears the concussion protocol, which could be a week or two from the incident, depending on when he's symptom-free. So it could be a while before we hear from Nico again.
Certainly. So we'll keep an eye on
that. And, of course,
that.
You know, obviously this goes without saying, we wish Nico the best. We hope he's recovering well.
For sure.
I can't imagine. I've never had anything that level of pain happen to me physically. I can't imagine what Nico's dealing with right now. I hope he comes out of it on the other side okay.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, again, like, I think the Bulls are doing the best they can with just a terrible situation that no one saw coming.
We criticize the Bulls for how they handle a lot of things. So far, they've handled this the way you should handle something like this.
Yeah, on all fronts.
We're going
to
give
the front office to the coaching staff.
Give the organization credit for how they've done this.
Sounds like the same with doctors made the most and best of the terrible situation, too. Mm-hmm. So back to the game, though.
Yeah, let's talk about the game that was played
Let's talk about Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah. So speaking of, you know, a guy who's, you know, benefits the most from the other two power forwards being sidelined. Yeah, Markkanen, second consecutive good game.
Good is it was up and down. He's 5-14.
We're grading on a curve for a guy's second game as a rookie when he found out he was going to be starting 2 days ago.
That's fair.
Like, I think, you know, when I say good, I don't mean like good for like a veteran player where you know what he's going to get. You know, his second game in a row scoring double figures, first double double, hit 3 of 8 from 3-point range. You know, he was
12 rebounds.
He was taking his shots. He was, you know, he had a couple of, I think those shooting percentages were kind of affected by, you know, he had a couple of takes to the rim that didn't go in, but I liked that he was getting those looks. You know, you can't, first of all, it doesn't matter like what his numbers are because this team isn't supposed to be good, so it doesn't matter like how many points he scores. But
oh, it matters to me. Lauri Markkanen, if he's going to play 37 minutes, he better be putting up 16 points.
Is he on your fantasy team?
He's not. I don't play fantasy basketball, but if you're going to draft a first-round pick and he's going to go out there and play 36 minutes in the first 4 weeks of the season and average 7 points, like, that's concerning. That's a red flag. He is on this team to fill up the stat sheet on the offensive end. So he better be putting up double-digit points. He better be showcasing some offensive skills.
He did that.
He's averaging 15 points. That's good so far. That's good. Red flags. If
he's I like that we're using averages out of two games.
Yes, I'm all in on math through two games. Don't ask me to start doing the math after the third game, but I can handle. Handle anything divided by two. Three starts getting tough.
Are we going to be doing this whole thing where like have you been following like the Lonzo stuff? Because he was terrible in his first game, and everybody on Twitter was like, "Oh well, like clearly he's a bust." And then he had a really good game last night against Phoenix, and it was like, "Oh well, now he's back; he's a superstar."
There you go.
I'm all about saying teams are back when they win one game after they lose.
Yeah, I love wild swings of emotion. That's what sports is basically about. But I thought the 12 rebounds for Lowry was important because that was a knock on him in college was his defensive rebounding. He's got good athleticism, and he's 7 feet, like moves well for a big guy. Uh-huh. Obviously, and he crashes the offensive glass hard. We saw that in college. There was a play in this game where he tried to crash the offensive glass for the putback dunk. I think it was first quarter, and he hung on the rim, and there was chaos above the rim, and they gave the ball to the Spurs because Lowry was trying to make a highlight reel play and didn't. But like, he crashed it hard. Those 12 rebounds.
That's all rookie stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Those are all 12 defensive rebounds too. I thought that was important because look. He got pushed around by LaMarcus Aldridge when he was trying to play some post defense. I thought he actually stuck Pau Gasol really well on like three possessions where he gave a little bit of ground, but not much. Like Aldridge overpowered him a lot more and kind of threw him around down low. But like he stood his ground pretty well against Pau and contested some shots and forced Pau to kick it out or shoot a shot that was difficult and kind of short of the rim there. So I thought that was good, but Lowry has to high point the ball. He has to use his 7 feet and his good athleticism and being young and spry and 20 as he plays people that might be in their 30s or something. Like that's how he has to go get rebounds. So I thought it was excellent, the rebounding aspect for him and kind of holding his ground on defense a little bit there. I mean, teams are going to keep going at him, though. I mean, that's going to happen all year. I think that's expected, but you want to see some growth. Offensively, knocked down a couple early three-pointers, looked confident. He didn't finish well around the rim, I didn't think, at all in this game. He had one wild one out of control that actually went off the back of the backboard, which rarely, rarely do you see in the NBA. It like almost defies logic and physics to do that. So there were certainly some growing pains for him in that sense. But it's a good start for Lowry, I would say
this is going about as well as you could have hoped. It could have gone for a guy, you know, again, this is a guy who missed half of the preseason with the back stuff. He didn't know he was going to be starting until 2 days ago. And he's come out there, and he's, at the very least, you know, he's not as good of a player as he's going to be in a couple of years. But at the very least, he's going out from day one and showing that he belongs and that he can hold his own in a rotation in the NBA. And granted, this is probably the worst team in the league, but
yeah.
He can hold his own against actual NBA players, against good NBA players.
I don't have a lot of other big takeaways from this game.
I have one.
Okay.
Robin Lopez, first career three-pointer.
Oh, yeah. That's a... If it's a takeaway, that means it has to mean something moving forward. Does that mean he's going to start shooting threes?
I don't think it is, but I brought it up to Robin after the game, and he was like, it gets washed out by the air ball at the end because he shot an air ball three.
That's true. So if you shoot 2 3-pointers and make one an air ball every single other one half the time, like you. You're doing pretty good in NBA history.
50%. We need to talk, Cody, we need to talk about Jaren Grant Island.
What about it?
He had one of the, I mean, he you know, overall.
I didn't like how he played.
If you look at the box score, he had an okay game, 13.6 of 14 shooting, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, that's fine. But he had one possession that was one of the worst possessions I've seen in a while.
Was.
You remember
was,
you know, the one I'm talking about?
Exactly.
He holds the ball. He has Manu Ginobili, who's like
wait, no,
45
years. We have to set this up correctly. He has the ball in his three-point stance, whatever, on the wing, so he can dribble, pass, shoot, all that. Live dribble, ready to go. Has uh-huh. the ball. He does that thing where he takes one dribble and goes a foot and a half, and picks up his dribble for no apparent reason, picking up the dribble. Had no one to pass to, no shot, and just gave himself up, basically, on the corner. And it looked like they were trying to run something, and Manu got all over him.
Manu, who's like 45 years old, by the way.
Yeah, all numbers approximate. He, Jaren held the ball for 10, maybe 11 seconds as Manu just relentlessly pressured him. And it was, as you said, one of the ugly, it might go down as the ugliest possession of the season for the Bulls.
I don't think it's going to go down as the ugliest possession of the season for the Bulls.
Ooh, I mean, you can't possibly have anything more opposite of what Fred Hoiberg wants to run than a guy holding the ball with a dead dribble for 11 seconds on the right wing when no one shoots just inside the three-point line. Even if he had to force up a long shot, wouldn't even been three-pointer. It would have been a long two.
There are
the
still...
The bane of Fred's existence.
There are still 80 games to go in this season. You don't think there's going to be any...
Worst possession of the season right there. I think that's
your bold prediction?
Yeah, that's my sixth bold prediction. By the way, my bold prediction on the Bulls starting 2-18 is looking great right now.
It's looking.
I want to let you know if they drop that game next Thursday, I think to the Hawks, they are well on their way to 2-18. If they win, their spirits might get lifted, and that game counts maybe 4-16. But this team is well on their way.
I'm worried about Phoenix. I'm really worried about Phoenix.
That will be a 80 more game storyline to watch, certainly for us. But are the Suns that bad?
Yes.
The Bulls and Suns are like tied for the youngest team in the NBA. Basically.
Right, but I was saying the Suns. I mean, the Bulls aren't going to be a great defensive team, but the Suns' complete apathy on the defensive end is just, like, staggering. And I'm not just talking about them losing by 50. My buddy Matt Moore from CBS had, like, a couple of screenshots that he posted on Twitter last night from their game against the Lakers last night. They were just not even, like, closing out. Like, they were just, like, not even standing anywhere near any of their shooters. It was just...
I'll say this for the Bulls, and why your worry about the Suns probably has... a lot of credibility, a lot of meaning, because the Bulls play hard. They played the Spurs hard.
Yeah.
The Bulls were bad.
And there was no point in this game where I felt like they quit or they checked out or anything like
that. Their defensive effort was good.
And they're just, I mean, it's just like the process era Sixers. They're going to play hard every single night. They're going to win some games because of that, but like...
They had an 18-19 assist to turnover ratio, so that's bad. That's awful.
Not good.
Anytime. That's ugly. So that's what it came down to. Too much dribbling. And I guess it's at this point, it's becoming a tradition for me to have a mini rant on the backup point guard. Ryan Arcidiacono got moved down to third string. So,
congratulations on that.
Can't really rant about him anymore. But Kay Felder, bless his heart. He's going to get shots up. Okay? Kay Felder's going to get shots up. He was 3-7 in 14, 15 minutes. So not outrageous, but he... First of all, he's 5'9". You claim he's probably like 5'6 or something.
I'm 5'9", and he is shorter than me. I can tell you that for a fact.
He needs to remember he's 5'9", because twice in this
game... He's not 5'9".
He needs to remember he's 5'6", because twice in this game, he went careening into the lane under the hoop and jumped kind of from the left like he'd do a layup. Spurs big man just standing there, so he has no way to shoot without getting blocked. And one time he tried to do like an up and under reverse layup, and he basically didn't have the athleticism to get the other side of the rim, and it was just absolutely abysmal. And then the other time, he realized he couldn't repeat that, so he just decided to throw a pass to no one, and the Spurs caught it and went the other way. He only had 3 turnovers. This is remarkable that Kay Felder only had 3 turnovers, because in the first 7 minutes that he played, I think he probably had all those turnovers, and he had like 3 or 4 passes deflected. His passing was abysmal in this game.
You can't expect somebody who's as short as he is to pass well, though. Like, you literally just do not have the court vision.
Yeah.
And the sad part is he's probably the Bulls' best option as a playmaker.
Yeah, it was ugly. So when he's on the court, he needs to do 2 things. Dribble and shoot. Like, just be an instant offense energy guy. Because this whole running the show and the offense thing, I'm telling you, it's not going to work. I know this is probably a bad take because I didn't pay much attention to him in the first game of the year anyway. We were watching on TV with the game being in Toronto. Being live up close and in person and seeing Kay Felder, stamp, seal of approval right there that he's a bad passer and it's not going to work out is the whole point guard thing. So he needs to make sure he reinvents himself here as just a microwave, a bucket getter for a few minutes at a time and go out there. And like, look, the Bulls need someone like that on their second unit because Lord knows we can't have just Denzel Valentine making plays out there with like David Nwaba and Chris Felicia. So Kay Felder has a role there. Just he needs to do that though, certainly. So
there was one sequence involving Kay Felder that I just have to address that I think just goes to show how little the Spurs like respect the Bulls or we're worried about the Bulls. I don't know if you noticed this. This was in like the third quarter, but in the middle of a play, Kay Felder gets knocked down, and while the ball is live, while like the Spurs have the ball and are like passing it around, like Manu reaches down to help Kay Felder up.
Yeah.
Like while the ball is, this isn't like after you know after the ball goes out of bounds or after the play is dead, he helps him up. Like this is like while the ball is live, and Kay Felder like waves him off and then stands up by himself. Like I think first of all that's kind of badass by Kay Felder, but also just like. Just like Manu is like, oh, this play is live. Like this is going on. I could be in position, but I'm so not worried about this team that I'm gonna go help.
Pity the Bulls.
Absolutely.
This is what happens when you have a rebuild. And hey, the Bulls are 0-2. They're well on their way to doing all they can to get that number one draft pick. I am going to point out their record and where they stand in the NBA pretty much every single game for the rest of the whole year because that's literally the most important thing alongside Lauri Markkanen's development and development of a few of these younger guys. So I think the 76ers are 0-3. There were some late games that might drop a team or two to 0-3.
Dude, the Knicks just blew a 21-point lead to Detroit. They're still winless.
Okay, making sure they're still winless. But the Bulls, still winless. And they play next, I believe, on Tuesday in Cleveland.
One of my bold predictions is on the line.
Yes.
4-0 against the Cavs.
Mine looking good so far. Yours, we'll get our first
we'll find peak, out.
First shred of evidence on Tuesday for yours. So we'll have a Locked On Bulls podcast coming back soon for you sometime. But follow Sean on Twitter, at Hyken, myself at Cody Westerlund. Locked On Bulls is on Twitter and Facebook by its name. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Most of all, subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. We'll be back with you guys soon. Thanks for listening.